You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome once again to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD, and FX trading. My word, the Six Nations is underway once again.
It is, indeed. Thrilling up at Murrayfield. I loved it.
Did you enjoy the weekend?
I loved it. A little quiet dinner on the Royal Yacht Britannia on Friday night, which was lovely. It was nice to be back.
What do you eat on the Royal Yacht Britannia?
Is it bad that I can't actually remember what we did eat?
Right. What did you drink?
It was lovely. Had a nice little bit of red, a bit of champagne as we had a little tour around.
I was expecting, you know, Petrus or, you know, Chateau Neuf du Pape or something. Well, not white or red. I mean, anyone can.
It was ultimately a rugby trip. So anyway,
I saw Dylan Hartley was with you.
Yeah.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show, and dressed up like the man from Del Monte.
He did look very good. There was a sort of an awkward hug between you two that posted on social media where it was sort of a, I don't know how to say it, but like a side bum hug thing. I don't know, it was a bit, do you remember that? Probably don't remember it.
No.
Someone's posted
that was after a lot of red.
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah. How were our teeth looking? Were they stained? They could have been at that point. But
was it good?
It was good. And then obviously the green room on Saturday.
Right.
You know, we put out Lol's call. Lol called it exactly right on social media.
Oh, did he? He has scored by three.
He said Scotland are going to edge it. And they did.
Lol allegedly had a scrap the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
But I didn't look at all like he'd done absolutely anything.
No.
He looked like.
And he didn't. He literally said the guy asked him for a light.
Yeah.
And because he's done that, he can't do anything without going. They've got a picture of him going like that, which means he's going, you want some?
Yeah.
But it wasn't at all. The guy asked for a light.
The guy tapped him on the shoulder, and I was thinking, well, that'd be me.
Yes.
the man of the people that I am potentially might have kicked off, but Lawrence did nothing. But they were like, Lawrence did a scrap. He actually looks like he's been really friendly and lovely.
You could learn a bit.
I absolutely could.
You learned one or two things from him. You could learn a lot more.
I could. You know, he's a better man than me.
How was your weekend?
Oh, how was my weekend? Well, I managed to watch absolutely no rugby.
Right.
Which
makes regrouping on a Monday night for a rugby debrief interesting.
Is that why we're here for a rugby debrief?
But it was sort of
the, what is the word? The sort of,
I don't know.
The shock when fans were like, what are you doing on the mountain, Hess? You're not watching the rugby? I was like, no. They just couldn't compute it. A guy stopped me at Zurich Airport and just goes, oh, you are James Haskell? I went, yeah. I went, why are you not Murrayfield? And I was like, because I'm DJing in the Alps. And he was like, but you're going to miss the game. I was like, yeah. And he was genuinely just couldn't compute why I wasn't like in full stash with my boots on, waiting for in that sort of ever-present excitement for the game. But it's very good. I travelled to Crans, Montana. And I need to get a couple of bits off my chest.
Right. If anyone's been watching your social media, they'll get this is going.
This is the point at which to hit times two if you're not interested in Husk Rant. If you are, the floor is yours.
Right, the travel thing's very interesting. So do you remember back in the day, they had this wonderful system where you turn up to an airport, you would queue on a conveyor belt, you'd weigh your bag, they'd strap it, they go, have you got anything dangerous in your bag? You'd say no, right? And then if you had a bazooka hanging out of it, no one's ever admitted that they had something. And then they would check you in and you would go through security. Now, you get to an airport, you fucking check yourself in, right? Self-check in, take a tag, put it in your bag, then queue up to meet somebody else to then fucking check you in again. What was the point of that? Which bright idea, which fucking bright spark came up with that as a concept? How about we fuck those machines straight off, take them in the bin, because I'll tell you one thing that people don't understand. It's not, you know, when Brexit came out, you got all these people going, meh, I can't wait to get rid of, I don't know why the Northern, angry Northern people, but whoever it might be, going, you know, problem with these people is all these immigrants coming over and taking our jobs. It's not at all. It's automation has literally taken people's jobs, right, made life more complicated for us, and they're blaming immigration. We've then voted for Brexit, We've got rid of all the people that actually wanted to do the fucking work, right? Who actually wanted to do the stuff. We've not letting them in. We've gone back to automation, made life 10 times more complicated. You then fly on the plane in your fucking mask so you can't breathe. Then you land, and then you go through passport control in a foreign country. There's a bloke with a stamp. He looks at you, doesn't want you in the country, you know, kind of takes your passport, eyes you up and down. Come back into the UK, go through an e-gate, because you can't go through e-gates abroad now, because we fucking fucked that up. We're not part of the European Union anymore. They make you queue up now, like, you know, so like somebody, you know, who has never been into a country before. Then, when you come back in the country, you've got the e-gates, not one of the fuckers works. So you're 800 people queuing up for two things. Try again, try again, try again. Then they send you to the fucking border force and there's only two people working. So first of all, if you're unemployed, please apply to work in the border force because they're missing a lot of staff. Why have we become so complicated? It's the stupidest fucking system I've ever met. And then you have to still pay for a test for a pandemic that's potentially over. Why? It's awful. It's a money-making exercise. It's bollocks. I cannot stand this shit and I want to make a stand for it. Somewhere's got to go, right, you're not doing passenger locator forms anymore. You're not e-gates. If they don't work, blow them up. Right?
It's very hard to take a bomb into an airport.
Though. It's very true. But I actually met someone from Border Force and he saw me doing a video and I was like ranting to myself and he came over. He goes, "You're right, sir." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You're going to talk about this in the podcast?" I was like, "Yeah, I fucking am." He's a lovely guy. He said he normally works at Gatwick, but he felt very aggrieved, like I do. The travel system's gone down the toilet. And automation is fucking us, not immigration. And stop messing around. And please, it's ruined the hospitality industry. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this bollocks. And
when it affects your paycheck,
it upsets me.
You are listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby, The Brexit Special. With me, Alex Payne, James Haskell.
In all fairness, on my flight up to Edinburgh, I was checking. So I'd been through what Hask and I realised don't ever try and check in these COVID times. Don't try and check in online. Don't try and check in on the mobile gate. Go to it because they're going to redo it, basically.
Yes.
Right. To check all your forms and everything else. Things that you can't do on your e-gate.
Yeah.
And as I was there, there was an old man. He must have been 65, 70, I would say, American, trying to get back to America. I did hear him use the word that his mum, can't mean his mum.
You're about to say, how old was his mum?
Well, it could be. If she was 90, all right. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. She wouldn't let him through. And he just earlier got a phone call to say his PCR test had come through. So 10 minutes before, doesn't have a mobile. Or he just got an email or something. So he had to go print it out. And then the woman wouldn't let him go through because he couldn't give her a mobile number. And he's there going, "I don't have a mobile." And she's like, "Well, do you have another phone?" He goes, "Well, of course I have a landline, but you can't ring it. I'm here." "So if you ring it, you're not going to get hold of me." And she's like, "Okay, can I have your mobile?" He's like, "I don't have a mobile." And it took forever until she finally explained, "Well, can I have your landline number so we can put it down as a point of contact? Yeah. We need it to fill out the form." And he was like, "Well, why don't you say that at the start?"
That's what I mean.
Then it was like, right, you're straight through.
And took the best.
And he was there for, I was queuing for 15, he must have been there 20 minutes.
Oh, sorry, one more bit, as I'm still on my high horse, riding, still on my Bill Beaumont,
trotting along.
A couple in front of me, they went, "Oh, your bags, over 30 kgs, your bags, you're not allowed to have that. You're going to have to take something out, maybe put it in your hand luggage." And I went, "Sorry to interrupt you. Take something out of the bag and put it into another bag that's going on the same fucking plane. We have to pay to put thing from your bag. What's the difference between being in a hold and being on the plane? It's the same plane. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if I fucking put my whole family in a bag and put it underneath, or I spread them in the locker. It's still the same plane."
And don't get about talking about the fact that you're 127 kilos.
That's what I mean. I'm 127 kilos. My luggage was 20 kgs. And so they went, "Well, that's the rules." I went, "Well, they're the stupidest rules in the world. It doesn't matter. Let them put the bag on. And then you have to mark it, because some div will pick it up and go, 'Oh, I've broke my back.' You're working baggage handling. Why do you have to put the weight on it? Just assume everything's heavy. I don't walk around and go, 'Oh, I've picked up this 100-kilo dumbbell. No wonder I've got a double hernia.'"
Yeah, I had that once where I bought two bags at 23 kilos each. We only took one bag. It was 27 kilos. And I paid for two bags at 23. And they charged me another £100 or something for my 4 kilos in one bag.
Yeah, but
I had two bags. I had 46 kilos.
Yeah.
No, but one bag's 27.
Yes.
Yeah, but I paid 46. I just chose not to bring another bag.
Well, honest to God, this is how bad the world has got. This shit stresses me out more than anything. And then to top it all, minding my own business, having the best time at Après Ski, blew the doors off it, one of the best DJ sets I've ever done, people climbing the walls.
Back to talking about me.
I came back out, there's enough about me, let's talk about me. I came back out and someone went, "Gah, England have lost, Eddie Jones has got to go," and I just went, "Do us a favour, mate, fuck off, please." Honestly, what are you talking about? Why are sports fans not rational at all? Like, there's no rationality. The media. Let me explain something.
Actually, when we walked in, James, who runs the podcasting venue that we go from, went, "Eddie Jones messed that up, didn't he?"
I know. But it's like, look, we lost the World Cup final in 2019, right? Did the world end? No. Did we all get on with it? Yes. Did England lose the Football World Cup? Yes. Whatever the hell it was, Euros, yes. It doesn't matter. It's sport. You win, you lose, you get on with it, you talk about it. Why is everything so dramatic? Who gives a shit?
Who honestly gives a shit? People are passionate about sport, James.
I know, but it's
so... But it's great you've brought it back to the sport, because here's a little segue before we get back into the Six Nations. Georgia drew with Portugal.
I saw that.
I know. And they want to be in the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. Go away.
Right.
One of the Portugal's try, the fullback hit one hell of a line.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of that. I mean, I know we tour on this show, and there is never a week that follows.
I can imagine every airline is looking forward to hosting us this weekend as we fly to Rome.
Well, yes. If there's any room on your method of transport, please can I?
Yeah. How the other half live? Yeah.
Have I got to deal with this on Friday as we go with England rugby travel and a whole load of passionate England fans to travel to the Azuri capital for one of the great away weekends? Yeah. Are you going to be doing this on?
I mean, I'll be even more stressed because I'll be getting gnaws. So, was it a penalty? Was it a penalty at the last scrum? I don't know, mate. Didn't see it. Okay. Do you think Luke Cowan-Dickie should ever play? Leave me alone. And then someone will go, "Sir, you haven't filled in your form. Where's your lateral flow? Have you applied for another test? You're not wearing your mask. You can't put that bag on there. Queue up for that." Oh, not that queue. It's just madness. It's madness.
I was sat with the great Rob Wainwright next to me in the
great
field.
Rob Wainwright.
And he was very protective. He had double mask on. He had a mask in the face because he's doing a cycle ride and it's the only thing he really wants to do. And he knows that sod's law will mean he will catch COVID and won't be able to go on his cycle. Which is for Doddy Weir by anyone. So anyone who's...
Are you doing Doddy Aid this year?
I did it through January.
It's finished now, isn't it?
Then they're doing the long cycle from... they're going down to Cardiff, Edinburgh to Cardiff. But we are in Rome when they come through my area, so
can't do it. Just on that quickly about the going off piece quickly. That's
off piece.
Talking about cycling, Doddy Weir's cycling. Progressive Rugby are doing, or not Progressive Rugby, sorry. What the fuck are they called?
Is this one of the ambassadorships?
No. It's sorry. So just talking about cycling. Alex Popham is once again doing that incredible Head Rugby Ride Challenge, Head for Change charity. They're getting everyone involved. I think you'll probably be doing it, Tins. They are doing it on the 5th and 6th of March. Yeah, it's online. You can take part, so please sign up. It's another trying to help injured rugby players, especially with brain injuries. So we obviously support that. So for Doddy, fantastic. Head for Change, fantastic. Get involved.
Get pedalling.
Yes.
Do you feel better after that?
I'm
not sure how many people will still be with us at this point.
I think it'd be more entertaining traveling with you on Friday.
Do you think?
I just think
I'm going to have like anxiety pills.
No, but we pride ourselves on common sense and cutting the nonsense on this show, right? And I just think sometimes you've got to just put your hand up and say some of it's utter nonsense. Bollocks.
Okay. I think everybody knows that, though.
No, but they don't. But we all just conform to it. We just bend
because
over.
What's the alternative? Well, other than shouting about it on a rugby pod.
Well, the other conformance is we just don't do it. I mean, if anyone gave me a COVID fine now, I just refuse to pay it because Boris Johnson does what the fuck he likes. Right. And if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. I promise you, I'll be carried to court, pairing a pair of Union Jack buggy smugglers, just giving that one, going, I'm not going to do it. I did my vaccines, I've done everything else. This is bollocks.
Right. Scotland win it or England blow it? Do we want to talk about it? So would you like to talk about, pandemic and you can talk about other things?
It was just a salient point because a lot of the stuff I do and we do is in the hospitality industry.
Yes.
That's been decimated.
Decimated.
Has been decimated. And you can't get any staff because of Brexit, because that's going to have a worse effect. I don't care about your political views. Just, I'm interested in just everyday logistics, simplicity. It's not, is it going to make my life harder or easier? Who wants to take most of the cash? Who wants to do this? That's all I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And they've ruined that, and now they've made more stupid, arbitrary rules, and I think it's very stressful. And then you couple it with a weekend of rugby where it didn't go so well for England, and then all the people with irrational thoughts have come out, and it just makes you think, well, what is going on?
Okay. We can correct that. It wasn't like it went horrifically wrong for England. England were pretty much in control after 60 minutes. They dominated the game really throughout the whole thing, but Scotland had defended fantastically well, and then they a fantastic try in terms of just the angle, picked a seam, great running line off it, finished it off perfectly. What we know that Scotland can do. Everyone, if you were talking to before that game, no one really knew who would win.
Yeah.
Which isn't often the case going up to Murrayfield. Normally, we are bang on favourites. Bookies even had us, it was half a point on the handicap. So no one really knew. And it was proved that way. It basically could have gone to a draw at the end.
Bertie knew.
Did Bertie pick it?
Yeah.
So there you
back
go.
Back Bertie. So stats, England lost the first game of the tournament for the third year in a row. That's the first time that's happened since the 1970s. Scotland retained the Calcutta Cup for the first time since 1984. I found it full time, and I think one or two friends of mine who watch it were like, because it was so there for the taking. But then you step back from it, and it is fantastic for the tournament that Scotland are now proper firing shots.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was credit to Scotland the way England went to play. I did think England kicked far too much in terms of when they were in Scotland's half. You know, they put those probing kicks back into the corner. But I think what they were trying to do is find out whether Finn Russell might implode, you know, throw a pass from deep that he didn't need to do, or, you know, put pressure on that way. Whereas Scotland, you know, played sensibly, got out their own areas and defended fantastically well. But England were in the right place. Come the last play of the game, England still had a chance to draw the game. I think after Luke Cowan-Dickie's moment, they still had opportunities to win. You know, they had a bad kick to touch from George Ford. They made, whether you could have said they should have gone for post there, obviously having Elliot Daly on the field who can smash a long one. It was only 40 metres out. You know, there were still opportunities. You know, the last scrum, trying to get a penalty to finish up with a draw. You know, there were probably four moments that went wrong. That was Luke Cowan-Dickie, Marcus Smith missing touch off that penalty, which then led to us being back down there and led to the situation. And then, you know, poor kick from George Ford, then a missed line out by Jamie George. You know, they're all this, but that's the high end of sport. Now people will go, yeah, but it's consistent. But it's not, you know, if you were going 60 minutes, I'm talking to Rob, Rob's going, yeah, we've lost this, it's going away from us.
Yeah.
Then, you know, with that kick, if Marcus hits it in the 5-minute channel, you know, you either get a penalty or for a driving line out, you take three more points and you'd be 20-10 up, or your more goes well and you drive over. So that is how the game was always predicted to be. It was always going to be that close. And it was. And now if I wanted to get on a bandwagon about something, it would be the last play of the game, and Darcy Graham was a blatant penalty because his elbows hit the floor before he reached the ball back,
right,
which is a penalty. But everyone was so focused on the scrums, and talking to Dave Flatmaster after the game, he was like, none of those were penalties.
Yeah.
And for the good of the game, the referee was never making that decision. So I think, and then on the third scrum, he was like, get it out. And then, yeah, we lost it on the back of that, but it could have quite easily gone either way.
So you've covered most of them. I jotted down talking points at the end, just for sort of clarification and to get your views on them. Scrum pens that could have, should have, weren't for England at the end, yes or no?
Look, I genuinely have said this a million times. Nobody knows what's going on in the front row. They're all cheating bastards. They're all trying to con the referee and doing what they're trying to do. I would have said, and this is something that I always want, I think it's very important to understand. Referees often are asked to make split decisions, but it's the pictures they see that are what determines. So, for example, if you get a turnover and you go over a ball and someone clears you out and the ball comes flicking out last minute, more often than not, they'll give you a penalty because it looks like you've played the ball while you were off your feet and playing. You know, sometimes when a breakdown goes down and the ball flicks off, you'll see the referee give a penalty because it's that the image is wrong. I know famously in the Six Nations a few years ago, when I asked the referee what did he want to see from a ruck, and everyone was, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, Haskell. What I wanted him to articulate was exactly what images he wanted to see, his expectation, because we've always been taught to you know, ask the referee, because they always say if the picture doesn't look good, they're much more likely to penalise you. And that's what they do, because they can't see every nuanced moment.
Yeah.
They, if it looks blatantly bad or something's too fast or something happens, they just, you know, that's why Rich McCaw, to be fair, got away with so much, because they'd seen him do it so well, they just assumed that he'd done it well, because you can't see all, everything in that split second. And when we played Italy and they cheated like fuckers on, with the breakdown, and I asked him, what is a ruck, sir? I wanted him to tell me what he wanted to see. But it came because he was trying to be a smart ass, and you know, I thought he was fucking funny. And all the all the stupid fans, you know, just go, "Oh, you don't know what you're talking about." They completely missed the point of it. And it's the same thing with that scrum. I watched it 3 or 4 times, and I was shouting at the TV because I saw the last 10 minutes. I was shouting at the TV, he just bottled it because the picture just looked so bad. Yeah. We went forward and it rotated round. Now, you know, Nigel Owen said that, you know, from on the BBC commentary, I think having a referee of his calibre on side saying, look, you know, to be fair, it was almost 50-50. You know, he couldn't see an actual infringement, but both sides have to go up. You can't just wheel one side round. Flatman said that. These boys live and breathe this stuff. I would say if that happened at any other time in the game, the image looked so bad, they would have awarded a penalty, and he didn't do it. And I think you, yeah.
So I had this conversation about the fact that when we went down to 14 men, when Luke Cowan-Dickie went off, we then had 3 scrums about 10 metres out from our own line, and the third one he gave a penalty. Now, yeah. I sort of said to Flats, was that a penalty? Because obviously then you're comparing third penalties, but yeah. When one's to win it, one's to either completely change the outcome of the game, referee doesn't want to make that decision. But when there's been 3 that have gone down, he's thinking, God, I need to get this game moving.
Yeah.
It's just an easy answer to
and
give
what
a
was
penalty.
Flat's answer?
Well, he said, oh, I'm not sure whether it was any of those were a penalty at the same time.
Right. I just think you...
So then you...
Who'd be a referee?
And then, you know, Cotter said on TV, he goes, you know, any other time, at any other part of the game, that's not that would be a penalty all day long. So but that's beside the point. You know, I still think the bigger penalty was the Darcy Graham one at the end.
But
it's because that is a penalty. You can't put your elbows on the floor and then play the ball.
Well, what I think fans have to understand, right, in these things is, you know, when you sit in the stand, I mean, I've sat in the stand next to Norses and they're all commentating and they go, why did he, you know, he kicks too much. They can't see, you know, why there's so much space out wide. Why doesn't he pass the ball? Well, you know, it's very easy in your rarefied seat to see it from an aerial view and not be involved under pressure and be able to see the images unfolding. Equally, it's the same thing on the field. If you're sitting on TV or you're watching something, you can see something in a very different perspective. But you remember again exactly what I said. The referees are seeing a certain picture and a certain snapshot of time. And a lot of those scrums, you know, unless it's blatant and the guy's hinged or he's dropped his elbow or he hasn't done a couple of telltale signs, it's very difficult for them to know what they're doing. But I would say that, you know, just because you can blatantly see what should have happened doesn't mean anyone else on the field can see it unless it's in reflection later. And that Darcy Graham thing, you know what I mean? It happened so quickly. There was another one, actually, I thought with, I don't know who was it who, from England, got the original turnover there when George Ford did that spoon kick into touch and didn't get anywhere. Someone from our... was it Will Stewart? No, was it Will Stewart? No, he's on, I don't know if he was on the bench. Whoever it was got the turnover. Actually,
oh, yes, Will Stewart.
Will Stewart. Yeah. Actually, I thought he dropped his forearm onto the floor quickly for a second. You know, by the letter of law, you're not supporting your weight. But the image happened so quickly, and because someone hit him back to his feet, he was able to get to it.
Yeah.
But that's a snapshot. Yeah. The referee's just seen him come back up. Now, by the letter of the law, that potentially is a penalty. The last player of the game, Darcy Graham, he hasn't seen that.
Yeah, the but referee wouldn't see it. It's a touch judge who's got to call that in.
Yeah,
it? Or it's a TMO.
I just think we've got to remember it looks bad. More often than not, they're going to go with it being a penalty. And I think the reason I feel like it should have been was that, A, it was the last player of the game and he blatantly didn't want to give it. Yeah. And B, the image just didn't look right. And honestly, you know, the nuance of that scrummaging stuff, they made it so complicated just so they can get paid more money. It's so the props.
But ultimately, it was a fantastic game to watch. It was a fantastic atmosphere to be involved.
Was it a good atmosphere?
When, you know, obviously it went a bit quiet when we got 17-10 up and we did look in control. But as soon as that penalty try happened, the atmosphere just stepped up another level and the crowd played their role massively. They were
and I love that Scotland, like, you know, I thought it was brilliant. You saw Stuart Hogg's passion.
Yeah.
You know, people get so bogged down. It's like, I think it's great for the game. They were fantastic.
I had a very happy mother-in-law. So
yeah.
Was she genuinely delighted?
She's always delighted when Scotland wins. So.
But I think it's good. You said exactly what you're saying, opening comments. I think it's great for the tournament. It's great for rugby. I think that's the nature of it. I think Scotland were doing well. You know, there's no
They're a proper team now, Scotland. Yeah. And we've done 30 years of watching rugby between us. And for 25 years of that, they've been pretty average.
Yeah. And they've got people all over the field now. that can do a job. But I would honestly say that it's great for the game. And we've got to be happy for it. And there's no point squabbling over bits and pieces, dissecting it. Yeah. Let's move on. No,
as long as the games are good to watch. Yeah. So that is what we've always said. And it was still a good game to watch. And Scotland showed their class when the limited ball that they did have. I mean, England had 65% of the ball in the first half. But yet they came...
That's the frustration, if you're an England fan, is that they should have won it.
Yeah, but they kicked a lot away. Yeah. They kicked a lot down there into touch where they were getting box kicks back. And then what Scotland did was set up their defence so well. So even though they had a lot of ball, they weren't breaking them down.
Can we just quickly fly through some of the others? Take the three or kick to the corner?
I was very surprised they didn't take the three. And then
with Elliot?
Well, it was only 40 out on the 15. So that is still classed as a red zone kick. Now, it's the hardest red zone kick you can have, but I would expect a forward to be able to hit that. I didn't feel, now that I'm not saying that what the wind was like on the field at the time, but where I was sat, I didn't really feel that you could, or where the rain was flowing, it didn't look like it was heavily into their face. But then when you've got Elliot there as well, strange decision, 3 minutes to go, I think it was about 3 minutes to go, they're still going to get the ball back, even if you miss. So it was a strange...
goal line dropout as well.
Yeah, it was a strange decision.
Actually, is that true?
You still get a 22.
It's a 22
that.
If you miss a pause. Yeah.
I would have probably had a shot.
Luke Cowan-Dickie, discuss.
Do you want to go?
I just say one thing before we talk about the incident? I thought he put out an incredibly articulate apology. It's really
I don't agree that he has to even apologise.
Well, that is the state of the game now.
I've got a real bugbear, and Dylan and I, Hartley, have talked about it before. This shit thing that players do, I'm not saying this in Luke Cowan-Dickie's instance, but the shit thing players do when they lose and they go on social media and go,
sorry to the fans,
onwards and upwards. Fuck off. You don't worry about what the fans are thinking. It's irrelevant what they think.
Yeah, the problem is, if you occupy a space on social media, the fans are going to let you know what they're thinking, whether
they
or not.
Do, but don't pander to their needs. That's why we're in this predicament with all this travel bot and all the rest we're going on about. It's because we keep pandering to the masses and keep getting cancelled. It's like, I would be sorry to my teammates if I made a mistake like that, which I've done many times. I would be concerned. The only reason you are doing that, and again, we're not talking about Luke because I'll come on to that, is you're doing it for affirmation.
Or you're trying to quell their answers.
It's a psychological thing. It's to separate. It's for you to go, listen, I mean, if you were utter shit, you wouldn't post anything, right, from my experience. If you were sort of okay, you post a thing and then you say onwards and upwards, and then you're looking for the validation to fans to go, don't worry, you did okay. It's all to do with mental, it's all to do with psychology. I promise you. You see players do it all the time because they want the affirmation. They want someone to say, you actually did it right. You did it right. Boys are okay. I've done it before myself. I've done it. I literally did it for that very reason. I look at other people, I'm like, no, you're separating yourself from the herd. You don't want to be tarred with that shit loss. That's it. Luke Cowan-Dickie having to apologise. I can understand it. He would have apologised to lads. He would have felt terrible enough. The reason he has to do it is, having spoken to some at the RFU, he reckons that the stuff after the last Six Nations was the worst abuse the England team ever got, even after 2011 on Mike Tindall stag do and the 2015, we didn't get the pool stages. We were abused to an inch of our lives. They reckon after that Six Nations was the worst. He's doing it because some people will have said some awful things to him and blamed the whole thing on. He had a brain fart. Honestly, he leapt like a salmon. Yeah. The weird thing is, I think he could have caught it, but he just did it. And Chloe said to me, actually, we were sitting there going, because they replayed it, and go, do you just do things in games sometimes and then wonder what the fuck you were doing? I said, yeah, I spent my whole career doing it. I'd make a mistake. You know, when I hit Jamie Roberts, I genuinely thought I was going to go low, and I took his head straight off and got red carded. And they're like, why did you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't bend in time, or I didn't do what I was supposed to do. Or you have a moment where you think, 9 times out of 10, I would have done it a different way. I don't know what he thought he was or where he was.
He thought, I've got a big winger that's going to jump over the top of me. Yeah. And I don't want them to score. But look, he's never been in that situation. I can pretty much assume he's never been backing off on a cross-field kick to try and understand how he's going to deal with that. He probably did the only thing he couldn't have done. I think any other way, they would, even if they had a score, they'd scored in the corner, and Marchant was coming racing across anyway. Yeah. So they would have scored right in the corner if they'd have scored. But if he'd have gone to catch it and done a better job and just pretended to try and catch it and not
header
on.
It.
Yeah, or
but
anything.
I think he's got his hands to it, actually. I think if he'd opened both his hands, he's got skill set to be able to do it. He could have caught it. But do I chastise him? Do I go, oh, damn you, Luke Kandy? I was like, no, he's a fantastic player.
There's no one who's going to be feeling worse than
that. That's what I mean.
And, I agree.
And I was, again, I know we're on a real, I'm a real rant today, but please, fans.
It's unusual.
Never, ever think you care more about the game than the players do. Never. So even in your impassioned statements, even whatever sport you follow, if you listen to this podcast, you message someone online or you call someone up, never think you care more than we did because or they do because it is utter bollocks. He will be inconsolable after that, having put a good performance in and being a fantastic player. Let his teammates down. And that, if you think you're upset, imagine how he feels. So just wind it in. You don't, you know, you don't care as much as anyone does.
And ultimately, we still had opportunities to... at least draw the game.
It's only a game. Marcus Smith, withdrawn performance, 17 points.
Yeah, I generally, scoring all the points, you know, someone on social media was mentioning going, who think there's no chance Marcus Smith is the next thing, he's no Farrell. I was like, hang on, he scored 17 points in a game. He's pretty much he hasn't actually taken any limelight. But you've got to understand now, Test match rugby is not always about him doing what he does at Quinn's. Yeah. It's about bossing a game, putting people in the right areas. Pretty sure he did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah. There was a really
good
article.
And then he took a great try. He swung round late and just took the try and smoked it into the and scored. I'm not entirely sure what people were expecting him to do. Now, whether Eddie made that a snap judgment on the fact that he missed that touch and he was like, right, maybe I just need George to settle the ship. But I would not have taken... I thought he played well, and I didn't understand why he took him off. Yeah, you could have said you should have taken Henry off, or
well, would you have played what Marcus and George?
I'm just saying what other options that you were. But the whole back line was very, very light. I mean, amazed that Jack Noel didn't get on way before that. You know, that game was always going to be nuggety, and who's the nuggetiest nugget around? It's Nolsey.
That's a superlative.
Yeah,
nuggetiest. Did you like that? The article I read about just on Smith's performance was that he looked so accomplished because he wasn't trying to force anything. He just let the game, you know, there was a lot of time on the ball, a lot of control.
Yeah, play what you see. You know, he took depth. You know, normally a guy who plays really flat, when he had to clear the ball, he took a great amount of depth, knowing that the pressure was probably going to be coming on him. Again, it was the same against the South Africa game. He wasn't standout in the South Africa game, but he did what needed to be done. And then when moments turn up, like where he dropped Freddie Stewart through, they were all done on the money every time, but it was done without effort, it was done without over-egging it or whatever you want to say. I thought it was a bit of a strange one to take him off. But we all know that George Ford, by the way, has been playing fantastically well for Leicester. So
90-odd caps.
Was I that worried when he came on?
I think...
Hindsight. I wish I'd known with hindsight what I had the brains to see with... I wish I'd known with foresight what I now know with hindsight. Yeah. It was that sort of...
But I think with, you know, imagine also the pressure on Marcus Smith that he's been, you know, is the next White Knight and all he wants to do is just play the game and play the game well. And, you know, like, I mean, I think there will be moments where you'll be able to see his brilliance and what his X factor. But actually, we don't want a number 10 that is just all out X factor all the time. You need the person to be able to do the bread and butter, and he seems to be able to do that. Was I surprised that he came off? Yeah, 100%, because I think he was doing brilliantly well. Do I understand the psychology behind it about him going, he's exhausted the tank? You know, it's the first Six Nations game. He's done what he's supposed to do. You know, he's missed that touch finder. He's gone, right, do you know what? We looked at probably, he would have had some metrics, Eddie, to look at. I'm not excusing it, but, you know, in terms of distance travel, GPS, whatever it would have done. He goes, you bring on George Ford, an accomplished player who, remember, 90% of the fans, a large proportion of fans thought he should start because of the way he was playing, because I saw the things online. And did he come on and do exactly what he's supposed to? Not necessarily. And you know, would he have done that? Would you have backed him to do it 100%? Is it a mistake he'll make? Yeah, but, you know, does Eddie turn around and say he got stuff wrong? I think he does at times.
I think also it's quite key that we say how Scotland played well as well.
Let's not
move away from the fact that Ferguson at 8 played fantastically well. Finn Russell, again, there's a couple of moments where you go, oh, what's he doing? But still... You know, managed the game.
His record against England is phenomenal.
Managed the game perfectly from them. I thought Darcy Graham had a great game as well. In terms of, he made a few line breaks up the middle. He looked dangerous. You know, Hoggy Hoggy did
really controlled.
Yeah, just controlled at the back. Still just, I just love waiting for him to try and smash a long spiral. You know, you see
his teeth look good nowadays, don't they?
I mean, teeth and lid. He's been rebuilt. That's almost like, you know, when you see the money coming through, you know, someone told me a great expression, there's no such thing as ugly, just poor. It's like, that's someone told me that. And I was like, that is so true.
Where are you?
Well, I'm going to look better if I make more cash.
Clearly, things aren't quite going
things
right.
Aren't going well. The graph down. But like, okay, if you ever wonder about that, and you think that's a bit kind of, what's the word? Social, not social, but kind of, I'm generalising and classist.
Yeah.
Look at the Kardashians, right? The state of them when they first started versus what they look like now. It's just poor. There's no such thing as ugly.
Do you know what did occur to me? We'll come on to Scotland in just a moment. But what did occur to me is off the back of the last game of the Autumn Internationals, England beat a South Africa side missing 8-9 players with the last kick of the game. Eddie was like, it was a close one. It could have gone either way. It's nice when you win. Sort of pretty similar for England, really. When you factor in Nomei, Watson, Manu, Farrell, Laws, Hill, Underhill, others, game could have gone either way. Lose it to a late kick and you're down by three. It's sort of, it's a classic case of what goes around comes around. Take on this,
but it's sport. Yeah.
That's the name of the game. Let's talk Scotland in just a moment. I want to ask you both whether you think they are now genuine title contenders, which still is a curious question to be asking after 30 years of. Let me come back because I just want to very quickly say that we have actually got a little note from Honda on the pod this week, who are the official performance partner of England Rugby, and they are bringing the power of dreams to the game we love. They are playing a big role with the volunteers in the English game, which is great to see. They're also developing a real understanding of how the England fans feel about their team and the sport, the supporters' relationship with the side, as we said, their achievements, and the dreams of those who dream the impossible dreams. Honda believes in a challenging spirit, embracing failure, which might potentially be why they're working with us, and in the joy of trying things and scoring tries as well. Just like England Rugby and their supporters, Honda believes in the power of dreams, as we said, and you can find out more at honda.co.uk/engine room/HondaXRFU. Talking of top performance, though, Scotland, are they now genuine title contenders with the way the fixtures fall? Wales in Cardiff this weekend, Wales with all sorts of holes in the boat.
My only worry about Scotland, and as you said, this is a very unique era for Scotland, I think, since the early 90s, where you know you can actively name 1 to 15, 1 to 23 in their squad, which hasn't happened before. You can normally name the forward pack because it's fantastic, or the back line, never really both at the same time. But now you're talking Lions players that they've got in their squad, you know, what is it, 5 or 6 Lions players in their squad. You know, they are a genuine contender. My only worry is, have they still got a slip up? For the last couple of years, they've been the team that can ruin someone else's.
Yeah.
But also, now my feeling is, and I hope to be proved wrong, because I've talked about how good Scotland try and play the game, or how well Scotland try and play the game for a few years. My only worry is, can they slip up their own?
Yeah.
You know, where I think they'll win away at Wales, but then, you know, they've got to
go to Dublin.
They've got to go to Dublin, which is a massive ask with how Ireland played on the weekend.
Yeah.
Just pure
love Ireland now, don't you?
Just pure domination, though. But the metres that they're travelling, the offloads that they're doing, the defenders that they're beating, they're playing in the right way. But Scotland are without doubt in the question. I thought England would win that game. I still thought it was close, but I thought they would win it, which would knock Scotland really out of the contender. But now it's the other way around. I think England now become the possible wreckers for, obviously, Ireland coming to Twickenham and then going away last game to France. They could become the Grand Slam wreckers for someone.
Yeah.
Whereas now Scotland are right in the mix for it.
We've touched on Darcy Graham, who was effervescent, to say the least. I want to ask you about Steve Tandy. Have you ever come across him in the game or not? Who's building the most extraordinary defence? I think it was 96% tackle completion or something.
Yeah, I think it was something, yeah. It was. Only missed 6 and they made 126 or something.
Right.
I'll tell you exactly what it is now.
But just when you have a man who, or when you build a defence like that, I remember in the Wasps days, you always had the banner saying defence wins championships, didn't you? Which went with you to every game. Can you see just a resilience in Scotland now, which has been absent for years gone by?
Yes. I mean, you know, if you ever talk to a Scotland fan, they always talk about kind of, you know, smaller pool to pick from and all this kind of stuff. I think they've got the players, they've got the experience, they've got them playing all around the world, they've had that Lions legacy. And now for me, you know, they had little bit parts, but actually, you know, you would question sometimes the physicality to match. They have that now. They've got a big set of, you know, Skinner's a massive unit. Yeah. They've got some real big boys there. And defensively, they look very organised and they're very aggressive with it. And I think, you know, with, you know, unfortunately, rugby, we've talked about it before, is about keeping as many men on their feet. And if there's one-on-one tacklers, you know, you've got 14 people on their feet the entire time. And that's why you have to have that attritional nature. You have to be able to break defences and vice versa. And if defence becomes a weapon for you and you're able to absolutely stop momentum, which England thrive on, you know, if you look at that team selection, I thought Lewis Liddam did well from some of the highlights I've seen carrying the ball. We said he was a bit like an Ardie Sevier in kind of his leg drive. If you look at a team like England, I think they went there to play, albeit some of the weather or some of the selections, and it didn't necessarily pan out that way. But when you've got defence, just keeps shutting the door and has that level of accuracy and that desire, because some teams want to just attack and they think defence is an afterthought. But Scotland look like they found a recipe, and they'll start building a lot of belief from that, and starts, you know, you'll see people celebrate big hits and turnovers as much as they celebrate tries, and that for me is a mark of a big team, and like, you know, they absolutely love it now, especially beating the fuck out of England. I mean, you know, that helps.
Finn Russell now hasn't lost to England in 5 years, which is a remarkable stat when you're given what's happened to Scotland years gone by.
Yeah, but that's the nature of where we are with rugby at the moment. You know, there's Ireland players who've only lost once to New Zealand in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing is changed. We need to just accept that Scotland
that's a very valid point.
Scotland are, like, I generally a world-class team now, you know, along with Ireland. I still think England on their day, obviously they're young and you talk about the players that were missing. And obviously France are world-class, if not the best at the moment. So we're in a lucky period in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, whether that's a drop-off of Australia or New Zealand, or obviously South Africa are world champs still, so it can't be that much of a drop-off for them. But, you know, the pool is very much, you know, things are getting very, way closer in terms of the rugby landscape, and obviously still in tier two as well with what Portugal did to Georgia.
The mention of Finn Russell, I think, moves us on to mention our official pizza partner who's on board for the Six Nations. We had a lot of feedback on our pizza eating last week.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of people
saying, did you say Domino?
There were a lot of people saying they'd invested in a lot of heavy-duty tech for the COVID lockdown period, and they were not prepared to use it just to listen to us chomping, chewing, heavy breathing as they go. We are loving the partnership, though, aren't we? Yeah. Actually had Domino's for lunch, and now Domino's as we record this.
Delivered to a happy listener this morning, didn't we?
Bringing in the good stuff. The reason we're bringing in those, you can pass those to Tins. This is our new section, which is called Dough Baller of the Week. Do you see what I've done there?
Yeah.
If you guys ever want to contribute you're very welcome to put forth an idea.
I wasn't asked. That's definitely
because
something
all you do is rant. Apparently, these are bespoke dough balls just for us, which is very nice. You can get them elsewhere, but I'm not sure everybody gets dough balls. The reason I wanted to bring in our dough baller of the week is that you may disagree with me, but I was going to throw the accolade at Finn Russell. Is that a fair call? On the influence of the outcome of a game, his performance in the last 20 minutes of that match at Murrayfield was sensational.
Are we doing one for each game though?
No, just for one of the weekend. We're going to give him 50 quid worth of Domino's vouchers as well.
Finn Russell's getting 50 quid Domino's vouchers.
Yeah. As an elite athlete, is that something you'd welcome?
I had a Domino's after every game, more often than not. I'd had some other food. Yeah, I did. Thank you. I'm going to only eat one slice because nobody needs
to. I think Finn would also appreciate it.
I have got a feeling that you are not a one slice man.
No, there's a mushroom one on that. He's got mushrooms.
It does say, it must be green. It's got green on it.
It's
got green on it.
Someone sent a vegan pizza.
Do you not think that's a fair shout?
Texas
just for the control and the.
What have you got there?
I can understand why you went there. I would possibly have gone with Ferguson. Was fantastic at tackling, carrying. Darcy Graham,
he got man of the match, didn't he? Ferguson.
Yeah, Darcy Graham, I thought he was involved in a lot of key moments.
Okay, let's rewrite this then. I don't think you can give a baller to. I don't think you can give a dough baller to France, Italy. And I think Ireland was so one-sided that I think you have to give your baller of the week to somebody who then, who was in a title
battle. If Scotland struggled next week against Wales,
then they won't get the dough baller of the week.
Yeah, but then your dough baller would have should have definitely gone to an Ireland player.
Okay, well,
why can we go?
I'm trying to segue. Okay,
why
pizza,
did you Domino's slice of the week, which would have been way better, and got Marcus Smith cutting through the line?
Okay, well, what we can say is that the closest and most tensest game of the weekend was the England Scotland game. So it comes down to three players. It comes down to Russell, Ferguson, and Darcy Graham for me.
So you vote for?
Okay, well, why don't we just take a vote? Majority wins.
Because we'll end up with three different things.
I don't think we will.
Well,
I'm going to go Darcy Graham.
I'm going to go Finn Russell.
I'm going to go Ferguson. No, I'm not. I'm going to go Finn Russell.
And the majority wins. And well done, Finn. Can enjoy
You've got 50 quid worth of Domino's pizza.
We've got 50 quid worth of Domino's pizzas and some dumbbells for your arms.
In all fairness, it's the right choice because you know he's going to smash that 50 quid of Domino's pizza. Yeah. With that rig, he's eating only pizza.
Yeah, exactly. I'm choking a bit. Yeah.
Are you right? You've inhaled it, have you?
I did a little bit of pizza with that, but yeah, he needs something in the bulking plan, the Domino's bulking plan, some bicep curls, some drum removal, and he'll be absolutely fine. But when you're that good,
he'll end up taking it just crash ball all next week.
I'd love that.
It'll be like Goody before he knows it.
I thought we might need to sort of record some light ambient music.
Yeah.
We'll have to play over this point just while we chomp away. We'll be back after this interlude.
The Love Boat.
Elevate me.
I am conscious we're a bit tight of a time this week, therefore I'm going to come back to my pizza in a moment or two. Just say thank you to Domino's for pulling out not only specially made dough balls, specially made good, bad and rugby dough balls. Apparently you can find them if you look very hard, but they're not widely available. Well done, Finn. We'll send you a 50 quid Domino's voucher. Enjoy as you... 50 quid of the Domino's pizza in the Scotland team room will last. We may have to make it 100 quid.
That's a chance that you think he's going to share it.
Okay, well, yeah, to his bedroom. That might last a little bit longer.
If I got that, I'd be back to my hotel room, my roommate, and I go, listen, I've got presents. What, do you know what they call it?
None of the people have.
Yeah, they call it... I call it gizzits because you gizzit here. I'd sit there and I'll share the room with Finn Russell who's eating. Oh, hey, got any gizzits? He'd be like, what do you mean? Oh, gizzit here, you fucking... And then I'd take a couple of slices off him.
A reminder that Domino's are offering 50% off pizza when you spend £30 or more online. It is the perfect match day, friend. A big thanks to the team at Domino's. We are, as I said earlier, genuinely loving this collaboration.
Yeah.
Ireland, Wales or France, Italy?
Predictor Burt got that right as well.
Got Ireland, Wales right.
Yeah.
How good are Ireland looking right now? I know we were sort of oohing and aahing before the tournament, but were they the most impressive of round one?
Well, I think yes, without doubt. I mean, to run in a bonus point win against what on paper still looks like a pretty strong Welsh team. I know they're missing a lot of caps, 700 caps really, but to have just had all the possession that they normally have, but then also used it. Create 520 meters of attack, which is fantastic. Score four tries. Yeah, they look pretty good. Kept the ball with ease. Caused problems all over the place. Mixed their game up really well. Still very good defensively. Eight turnovers. So over ball. Even when Wales did have the ball, they could get it back. So yeah, they look a real deal. We didn't really know what Wales were going to bring to the party, and unfortunately it didn't really go their way. I do love the fact that Josh Adams gets confused whenever anything goes against him.
Why?
Well, he always thinks he's been hard done by, doesn't he? He did it on the Lions where he's like,
yeah.
Well, if you run into someone's chest to block off the ball, you're probably going to get a yellow card nowadays. So.
But that's part of being a pro. It's like Luke Handicke walked off of here. It's like, that is a ridiculous decision. And the slow motion.
See, when I trip people up, I can't understand.
How big is the hole in Wales' boat?
It's a difficult one. They started slow last year and ended up winning the title. They got
They weren't as slow as last weekend.
Well, I don't know. Did they start again on Ireland last week? Last year?
No, they won last.
They had a red card. Basically, Ireland had all the possession, didn't they? And then they got that Peter O'Mahony red card. Was that the first game? Or was that the second game?
It's the
first game.
And then Scotland got someone sent off as well.
Yeah, And Ferguson.
Ferguson.
Yeah. So, but this time they've been, they no luck fell their way, and Ireland were far more clinical than what they were last year. They probably had the same ball amount of ballers last year, but they did better things with it. And I think there's a few easy tries in there. So Wales have got to look at their defensive setup a bit more, but we'll wait and see. I mean, missing that many players, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but they definitely have some work to do.
I've got to stop eating pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, there are teams who are really good at what they do, and then there are teams who are really horrible to play against. Have Ireland got both of those bits right now?
Yeah, you know I think so. You know what you're saying about the when they hold people up for a maul and when they do the nuggety.
Yeah,
that's the word of the day today. The nuggety stuff. Yeah, but then some of their handling on the weekend was fantastic. You know, small, intricate handling that then paid off on edges. I think for Gary Ringrose's try, I hate to think how many people touched the ball. I did question.
He's such a class act.
He's a class act.
He's one of my. I've got a proper like
boner for him.
Man crush.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, I think he's a superb player.
Oh right,
I did say if I was the last defender against that Wales, he was carrying the ball under one arm. There was no way he was passing it. He should have stepped in and hit him, but he still finished it off. That's the other thing is that even if it's a 2-on-1, as long as you score it, no one cares. But if he'd got tackled and stopped, the winger should have been going mad at him. But you know the. Everything's just coming together so well for them. The small, intricate plays that they're doing and the balance between what they do. They've still got that forward pack who can do the one-out runners, truck it up when need to be. You've got the footwork of Furlong and Kelleher and these guys, Porter, fantastic lid.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Really growing it out.
I'm not sure where it's come from, but it's a fantastic lid right now. Fits into the hairdos of rugby players at the moment. And then they've got a back row who can get it done in the old school way and in the new school way. You know, Josh van der Flyer made a few breaks, so they have that balance. And I think they've got a quality back line all the way through. And
then they throw in Mac Hansen,
now they're actually using that back line, which now gets scary because the players that they've got in there are quality. Bundy Aki was throwing some passes around. You know, people sometimes doubt his handling ability. He threw some crackers on the weekend.
Do Ireland go to Paris and win, lose or draw? Let's tidy this up while we go. Because actually,
if the weather's the same on the weekend, I think I would fancy
in Paris.
Yeah, I would same as what it was this weekend. I would fancy that'd be a perfect time for Ireland. But then Ireland's playing good rugby too. So will Ireland have the balls to go toe to toe with? So this could be like what England did up in Scotland. I don't think England really had the balls to go toe-to-toe with Scotland. They thought they could win by pressuring them, putting them on the back foot, doing all that, which is what I expect Ireland might go back a little bit to. I'd love it if they go and, okay, let's see who can score the most points because that would be a cracking game. But I think France come out on top of that if the weather's okay.
Do you know the other thing? I don't know whether either of you got a view on this, but the thought occurred to me when we did our preview last week. How much credit does Mike Catt deserve? Because we laud Andy Farrell, but how much is Mike Catt doing for Ireland and their attack and their?
I think it's taken a while. I think I sent him a few interesting texts a couple of
when
years
you're in
ago
your when he, former phase.
When he first joined,
did he respond or just leave you hanging?
No, I think he knows just to ignore it.
Two blue ticks.
Whereas now, I think he's definitely playing a role within that. Cat, he's always had an attacking mindset and he's very good at coming up with ideas of how to get things wise. Obviously, he was a fantastic ball handler. And I think you are starting to find the blend of both of them mixed in, and Catty will obviously play a big role in that.
I always like working with Catty because he, as a player, as a coach, he always wanted to develop all the players and get them to be able to have the ability to play, to pass, to link, you know, to be able to pass off both hands. He's such a personal, he's such a top guy, being able to work one-on-one and take players to one side and obviously see things quite differently. And, you know, I think he's brilliant. Obviously, Andy Farrell, it's like Eddie Jones, you know, when he was in charge of England, you know, he had Paul Gustard and Steve Borthwick, you know, but everyone talks about Eddie Jones, but those guys were perfect coaching staff. And I think, you know, obviously, Catty went to Italy and then coming over to Ireland, I don't think he had a job in between, he might have done. But I think he's brilliant. He will definitely be having an impact. And I think because he's a good, he's a great man to have about because you can have a conversation with him. Do you know what I mean? He's quite personal. I think when, in the last few years when he was with England, remember he was brought in as the skills coach.
Yeah.
Also brought in as the attack coach, and they wanted Andy Farrell, and he sort of didn't get him. And then he got Lancaster, got Andy Farrell, and then sort of Catty got moved sideways. I think it was quite frustrating, even though they obviously all got on well. You know, but I think he's going into it knowing your role and being able to deliver. He's a good emotional energy for the team because he's funny, he likes a joke. He'll help build the boys. I think it builds quite a nice balance. If Andy, I mean, I'm not in the Ireland squad, but this is only assumption.
Are you not?
Is the mother of all fuck ups. But assuming that Andy Farrell, you know, is obviously again really personal. You know, a great sort of orator and delivers stuff really well, leader of men. But I think it's quite nice to have a different emotional balance. And certainly, my experience with Catty was. He understands the importance of a squad and when it's to entertain, when it's to put the pressure on and also help you develop. And I think he's very good at developing players.
This might be absolute slander, but am I right in thinking that Mike Catt's dress sense has been called into question over the years?
Well, he is from Port Elizabeth in South Africa. Yeah, I think it did over...
I don't know where I've got that as a memory
from. It definitely has been called into question over...
And the reason being? Years.
Well, he's terrible.
Right.
In the back.
I can't comment.
I think it's better now. I think Ali, his wife, has amended some of it. But at the end of the day, he is still a Saffa from PE that sometimes gets it wrong.
Right. And you let him know about it?
Yes.
What are you looking at?
I'm just looking at the Josh Adams yellow card. So I'm just.
Where do Wales go from here? Crikey Moses. Lose at home to Scotland and suddenly there are PVAC. I mean, you talk about Eddie Jones. Winning your hero, losing your out. I mean, in Wales, if PVAC goes 0-2,
after being
as
champion.
Being champions last year,
yeah,
because the autumn wasn't ideal for them either.
No,
does that?
Well, do you say keep faith and say we've got a number of players injured?
Yeah,
and this
absolutely.
Is where it is.
Well, I hope so. I hope there's a rationale.
But... or do you get very upset? I mean, I've never lived in Wales, so I can't tell you what their reaction to stuff is like. So, you know, hopefully they're slightly more rational than fans over here, but I don't know. Look, I think it's not, it's going to be
I'm
quite
not
hard.
Sure the Western Mail picks the middle ground.
Well, Wales Online, all they do is steal stories from other papers and put their name on top of it. It's the most amazing level of incompetent journalism I've ever seen. Like, I'm actually shocked. Like, I'll post something, I'll just steal it and make it out as a headline for them. Like, I don't know how... I could run a paper if all I do is wait until someone else takes a story, change a few words and put my title on it. Like, I might just do Hask Online and it's just a story where I steal the latest headlines 10 seconds after everyone else has done a headline, copy and paste the article and just attribute quotes and go, that's all they ever do. It's amazing. I met a journalist once I think it was in the on the Lions tour, and he was like, I work for Wales Online. I was like, what, you just do copy and paste? You must be fucking flat out. You can't write any articles. You took great offence, but it's utter bollocks.
I got a degree in copy and paste. Very effective. Are you worried for Wales? Or is there just sort of a hyper nonsense?
I haven't really gone through that game yet with a fine-tooth comb.
But as a sort of in a macro sense?
I am worried that they are going through... You know, this transition where a lot of the older players are going to have to sort of step aside, and they need to bring... a younger group through that can carry on the mantle, but they're obviously losing a shed load of experience within that.
I suppose the question I was sort of broadening out, because one of the things I was thinking about as we came into this was, if you look at the system in Ireland, which is now absolutely humming, the academies are incredible, you know, the provinces all feed into Ireland, it's quite the All Black model. Ireland are really benefiting now just from a production line of talent. And in Scotland, it's not the same scale, but they're beginning to really fire both Glasgow and Edinburgh, and that feeds very nicely into the team. Whereas in Wales, if you peel below the test team, it's very, very fragile. The infighting amongst the regions and amongst the club game there and the production line of talent is really quite thin. And I just wondered whether you see that as a problem.
Do Scotland and Ireland regions have owners?
No, I think it's all... the provinces, I think, are union-based. Yeah.
So
they might have private investment, but I don't think they have private ownership.
So the difference is that Wales are still owned by...
Well, they're still owned by, but they have now sort of these joint contracts. Yeah.
So are they just behind the curve at the moment? Because surely rugby is still pretty strong sport in Wales.
That's a bigger question than I could possibly answer, but I don't think... I mean...
What else do they play?
Football, Euro 2016, you know...
What, Gareth Bale?
Yeah. So name the team. There's Gareth Bale. There's Phil Davis. Jonathan Davis. Phil Llewellyn.
But
Barry Davis.
they've still got very strong schools, and those clubs are still functioning. I think it's a shame that, you know, I don't know what level the likes of Ebervale, Caerphilly, Pontypridd, Pontypool,
Neath,
all that have Neath fully been absorbed by what Swansea, the Ospreys are now. I don't know.
How do you run in Wales?
Fast,
carefully.
We're asking questions here that none of us know the answers to.
But sounds maybe, like every show.
Yes, it's very true. I wonder if, there'll be far more educated people out there who can tell us
before we can. I don't think, where I think Wales haven't quite got it right is being able to bring in new blood to get them caps. And obviously their actual club games, they're not really performing in terms of getting...
No, I don't think they're far too many shots in the...
Yeah,
URC or Europe.
And they've had such legendary players and they've stayed at a legendary status for so long, they just like automatically pick themselves and then you struggle then with what comes after it. Yeah. So I think they need to sort of get better at blooding those youngsters when they come in.
I know you said about Paul, there is some talented players
talent.
I know Thomas Young, I think it was in the squad or whatever.
He's an outstanding player.
Yeah, he's incredible. Just hasn't had that opportunity. I think he's incredible.
Is he going to Cardiff? Or have I made that up?
No, he is. Yeah, he's leaving. Yeah. Is he going to? He's going somewhere.
No, he's going. Isn't he going where his dad is?
Cardiff.
It's Cardiff.
I mean, I think there are some.
He's joining his dad at Cardiff.
Yeah. I think Tins is right. I think Tins is right. Just trying to get the opportunities because you've had so many good players ahead. Being able to sprinkle them, but look at Tame Basham, he got a try in the end. You earmarked him as the player of the someone to look out for.
Get mine on the old bookshelf.
You still go through the team, and they're Wyn Jones, Lyon, right?
Yeah,
Beard, Lyon,
yeah,
Francis didn't go, did he?
No.
Then you got Bigger, Zammit, Adams,
Liam Williams.
I mean, there's still Nick Tompkins, even though he's not a Lyon, he's a great player.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's enough, Thomas Williams, almost a Lyon. There's a lot of talent in there, and that's without throwing in Basham, who I thought was played really well.
I like Basham, but who is Welsh born and bred, by the way. You speculated, has he got a Kiwi?
No, did I?
Did you not?
No, I think someone else did round here, and I then just joined in and put the knife in.
Let's leave it for another week. I think they sometimes get caught cold and they get better.
Spike Milligan said. On his gravestone, he wanted engraved, "I told you I was ill."
Yeah.
But I can't remember who it was that said, "Rumours of my demise have been greatly exaggerated."
Yeah.
Might well have been him as well.
I love Wales.
Him back to a full principality. That's what I mean.
I think, you know, that 6 Nations without them being really strong, it is, you know, won't be the same. And I think they are very, very capable. I think that side's great. Let's just take it easy. It's day one, week one, relax.
France, Italy, 37-10. Which is a better result than any of the 5 games they played last year.
Yeah. And
are we seeing buds and seeds and clouds of optimism around Kieran Crowley in Italy? Or is this yet another?
I still think this is another one where we'll leave it till next week.
Okay.
Because the weather was atrocious in France. Look, I think their defence overall looked way better. France really picked up the tempo in the second half, a load more offloading. Aldrit was superb.
Yeah.
It was a quieter game for some of the back line. Dante did his work. Pinot is just so good. So good.
And that one where he almost sort of little half volleyed it up. And a lovely try.
Villiers is on fire. Yeah. You know, my captain in my Six Nations Fantasy League, Benjaminet, had a quiet game and missed a few shots of goal. So I might have to revalue his performance and whether I pick him next week, but
he's going to really mind about that.
Melvin, he will mind.
He will.
I know he listens to the show. He's big. They got the job done. It was tricky conditions, and then when it dried up in the second half, the juggernaut eased into full motion, and you could see they were upset about it. Wookie, he was literally just running around maiming people because he was so angry with how the game was going, but he was outstanding. Villamese, I can't pronounce it.
Milanese.
Milanese.
We really are on the cutting edge of knowledge in rugby.
I noticed some of the some of the commentators were actually trying to make it sound like it was French. We know it's not.
The same way as he's a big unit commentators would call Mauro Mario. I'm like, I mean, just get it right. It's one job you're paid to do.
Coming from you.
I don't pretend I'm not a commentator, am I?
I'm going to go back to just saying, and obviously, so you can cut it back in there. Obviously, Villamaisie was...
Sir, would you like some Parmesan on your Villamaisie? Predictor Bert unfortunately chose Italy over France.
Well, half time. I know. 37 minutes or whatever it was. Yeah. It was looking quite good.
That's what I mean. But then actually turns out Bert got 2 from 3. Predictor Bert will be back next week, by the way. If you check him out.
Has he recovered yet?
Yeah, he had to 15.
It's exhausting watching it. You're like cantering alongside him with his GoPro on his collar.
He 15 times he had to do these retrieves for each game. And he, like, the thought process, he basically got into the kitchen, just lay down, slumped and slept all day.
Poor boy. Do you know, this is a really hard show to do this week.
Why?
Because you're one act into five, and you're trying to find...
That's what I mean.
You end up just sort of talking about the detail, or you're letting you rant about...
Yeah, but also, this is what it should be about. It's some calm...
Chew the fat.
It's calm, concise... Well, I wouldn't say concise, that's too strong a word. But it's like a relaxed overview of a tournament that's only just started.
Yeah.
There's many a slip betwixt cup and lip. Let's see where we end up. Let's just say that rugby was the winner.
Many a slip between cup and lip.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Moment on the lips, lifetime on the hips.
No, you're just now saying lip-related quotes. You're both a couple of dickheads.
But on a good side for Italy, they still created nearly 300 metres of attack, which, you know, considering if you look at Scotland, I think they had about 170.
I like Garbisi as well.
Yeah, he played well. We said in our sort of pre-Six Nations build-up that...
Proper 10.
You know, he needed to sort of step up and do it. His vision for that try for the debutant, forgive me, I've forgotten his name, was outstanding. They still need to lift their tackle rate. It was only 85%, but you need to be up in the 90s, really.
Winners this weekend will be Wales, Scotland.
Scotland.
Yeah, I think Scotland. If they want to be contenders, they need to go to Wales at this time and build off the back of their defeat against
France,
Ireland.
Ireland.
I'm going. If it's dry,
France.
I'm going to sit on the fence if it's wet. I think Ireland can take them if it's wet.
Italy, England.
Well, England. I mean, just do it for 2 minutes. What do you reckon would happen if we lost to Italy? Just. To hypothesize as to what would happen.
It's official, the world would implode.
Yeah.
I think there would be a few problems brewing.
Heads would roll.
I don't think heads would roll, but I think there would be... You are then 18 months from a World Cup, having come fifth in the Six Nations last year and probably looking at fifth best, if you're lucky, this time around.
Right.
I think for the richest union in the world, that's... underwhelming.
And we are out there doing... Well, actually,
we're going to have a great
time. We keep claiming poverty now.
Right, if England did lose to Italy, we have to storm the after-match dinner and say we are taking over this team.
Yes.
And we just remove the caps.
I think Eddie might say, there you go, you can have it.
the caps and the ties of the lesser men, and we whip them on the way out.
Thrash them. Shame.
I think it actually comes down to... I can't believe we're hypothesising about this, but I think it comes down to the game itself. If Italy are inspired, I think I'm right in saying England are the only team who haven't lost them in the Six Nations. Yeah. Everyone else has been beaten by Italy.
We were so, very close once the George Ford little grubber through and score away from home saved us that time, didn't it?
But you know, for the good of the sport, at some point it needs to happen. Otherwise, we're going to be having the same conversation about Italy forevermore. Yeah. And, you know, England are rebuilding. I don't think anything dramatic would happen, but I think you would then very much need to go back to the drawing board and say, right, we obviously need Manu and Laws and Farrell back in. Should we be looking at a Billy? Should we be looking at a Mako? I'm not entirely sure
we're in a rebuilding phase. I just think we had a few injuries of people you would...
I think there's a completely different team now.
That's what I mean. What would happen?
Well, you look at who's left. I would say we're
in a rebuilding phase.
I pulled the pin.
If Courtney was fit and Johnny Hill was fit...
Yeah. When you look at what England did in the summer and then you look at what they did in the autumn, players like Jamie Blamire and...
very young.
Help me out. Raffy Quirk and Freddie Stewart and Radwin had a run in the first game.
Marcus Smith,
I think, is coming in. But I think you're looking
at rebuilding if they're
Dom Brandt's coming
the
in players. And Ludlam's back in. Well, because you're rebuilding because you're getting rid of players with 85 caps like Billy and you're bringing in guys with two like Dom Brandt.
Yeah, but if someone's playing better, you're not getting rid of him. You can always bring Billy back if you needed to.
Well, of course you can, but you're choosing because to go with a guy who's got two caps.
Because it's been quite a mess.
Well, okay, rebuilding might not be necessarily the right word, but you have changed a lot of personnel.
So it's picked on form.
Well, you tell me.
Oh, it's nice, isn't it? When he gets the
Well, no, I don't know why. I'm the one to ask the questions right now.
We ask the questions now.
How do you like it?
Because all I hear is this.
No, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, it was people who had question marks over whether they should have been playing because of the likes of other people's performances. So I don't think it is a rebuild, but it's a very new look. Is that a better word for you?
Well, it's two
words. An in-form new look team.
Yeah.
But if they lose, what you're saying is they'll have to review whether these in-form ones have what it takes, whether some better experience would help and some more nuggets.
Listen, I'm throwing it out there. Answer your own question. Well, I don't know why you're asking that question.
I was more concerned that we're going on to Italy with England Rugby Travel. And, you know, obviously if you go on a travel weekend, you love rugby. The word Norse may be thrown around.
you're putting your Norse pants on.
How are we going to entertain a load of people if we lose? Yeah. I reckon, what would you do?
I think doesn't our workload stop at the game? So we make a run for the hills.
I'm just interested as to what would happen because I'm just forecasting with the media, with all those, you know, those journalists that
but
don't
it's
write
funny,
normally.
We're jumping on the back of who now we've just said is a tournament favourite team that we lost to by 3 points in the last minute of the game. And now we're losing to a team that we never lost
to. But this is what we want, is we want competition and we want stories and we want, you know, nobody wants to see Italy lose all five games again this year.
No, I do think that Italy are making grounds forward. It was better on the weekend, whether the way you blame the weather or not. It was better, and they still made breaks, and they made.
You're such a twisted little fire starter.
I know. What I'll do is that all these people, all these journalists that never normally write on rugby, will come out. Your Charlie Sales, these other people will come out and do personality pieces. The whole world will be destroyed if we. I just can't wait because it happens one day. It's going to be awful. We lose a couple of points to Scotland, who are from a fantastic
side.
Who is the biggest?
Well, obviously they've beaten. Who's Italy's biggest?
They beat South Africa a few years ago, but South Africa were dire at that point.
That's a
they beat
raffle,
France,
could they?
France in their dire period as well.
I don't think we will lose, but I just was hypothetically saying.
I think
what
it could be a properly good game, though.
But then do you have the old adage or the whole thing, the cliche that's thrown around going, unless we pump them by 60 points, then it's not a good victory?
No, because
do you know what I mean?
I would hope Italy are moving on from the side where you can't win either way. If you win by five, done badly. If you win by 60, it was never a competition.
Daily Mail article will say some crap like that. Like I saw the thing the next day, it was like, you know, Eddie Jones has got to stop playing games or it's time, whatever. You know, he flip-flops around depending on what he said. It's very different on a Friday, what he said on a Saturday. He'll say something like, you know, if England don't win 60 points, they're not a world-class team. When I coached, we beat them by a million points or whatever he usually comes out with.
What I would say is looking at England performance. Obviously, at the weekend, I felt they kicked too much ball away in Scotland's half. But maybe that was a plan just because they, as I said, they want to put them, actually make Scotland have to play out of their own half. But if they go to Stadio Olimpico and it's a dry, nice day in Rome and they play a kicking game, I'll be disappointed.
For the record, Italy getting pumped. I'm just going to say it.
But quite fun speculating.
It's quite fun speculating.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. And do you know what? If we lose, all these angry Italian fans can go, hey, James. Can you do impressions like that? I think you can. Hey, James, you're speaking of bullshit. The fuck are you? And that's what I get. And I'll be like, okay, you were right. I was wrong.
Perhaps Villemza will transfer from France to Italy. No,
Villemese.
Come on. We are going to be seeing a lot of each other over the next few weeks.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
I'm sorry to say.
Trip to Italy,
I think there's just stories galore out
stories
there.
Stories for days. Because we are teaming up once again with Vodafone. You'll be familiar with our partnership with them already around the British and Irish Lions to support grassroots clubs and their return to rugby. Last year on Vodafone's Lions Legacy Tour, we visited Westbury RFC and Dungannon RFC. I hope the Dungannon 9 is well and truly recovered after Tins played in that game. Next week, we're off to Aberdare. And last but certainly not least, we are going to Bannockburn in Scotland to visit them. This trip will shine the spotlight on the great work the club do to engage veterans. Hask, Tins and I are going to be there lending a helping hand throughout the day. And to finish it all off, there's going to be a packed out live show in the evening. We've got some big names joining us as well, which we'll be revealing in due course. So that is set to be a bumper day. On top of that, Vodafone are providing tech solutions and digital education that will support digital skills, financial sustainability and online presence. And that obviously is a hugely important area after the last 2 years or so. And the cherry on top of all of this is that Canterbury, the good people, are going to be providing kit for the clubs as well. It is a genuinely heartwarming project to be a part of this one, and very much looking forward to a couple of weeks' time. So if you are around in the area,
I want to know who they're playing so I can look at...
Are you going to bring your boots again?
Yeah, they might be in the bag.
We are in the mighty Stirling area. Come along and find us there. As Hask has mentioned, we're off for a romantic weekend.
Love it.
See what I've done there on Valentine's weekend. Very much looking forward to going to the Italian capital. We are off with England Rugby Travel, who are taking thousands of fans. Why are you looking so nervous? Thousands of
me
fans.
Me with 1,000 fans.
Over with them. You're going to have to be on very good form.
No velvet rope.
Definitely.
And no velvet rope. You're going to be palm pressing and holding babies, and you're going to be arms around everybody. Yes, you are, James.
Are we going to be... Please make that one.
Quite looking
go
forward
away.
To actually being part of... Big England travelling support group.
No, we've got we've got a big weekend.
That's going to be a very good weekend.
I'm quite looking forward to Italy and the food and stuff.
Right. And the people.
And the coffee.
And the coffee.
We're also actually going to be joined by Eddie Jones. We're going to do a lot of bits and bobs out there, but we've got Eddie Jones joining us for one of our evening events as well.
Have we?
From the England team hotel. So you will have to bring your A game.
He can't.
You never know. Take your boots,
Hask. He's in the bubble, so he's on so virtual.
Normally he turns up in person.
You won't be able to give him a hug. He'll only be on virtual.
Not? Take your boots. Imagine if Lewis Ludlam goes down in the warm up.
I couldn't run. Imagine that.
We've had to call in James Haskell.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen.
What do you think you could do if country came calling in a crisis?
Would you?
Do you think Eddie would say?
Would your body warm up?
No, your time has come.
I haven't run in about 2 years, 3 years. So I don't know what would happen, but if he asked, I would do it. I'd just
would
go.
You?
But only if I could do like.
I think he'd probably take Tins to play at six.
I was going to say I'd be pretty upset if you took Hask over me.
I don't know.
Eddie, at least I can get around the corner.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing? Which is your family member has just been announced as the new patron of the RFU.
She has.
Did you see any of the footage?
She did brilliantly.
Well, can I just say something? Which is 77 caps your country and 75 caps your country. She looks a more natural rugby player than both of you put together.
I text Ellis and said, "Mate, please tell me anything she messed up on," and so I can sort of family WhatsApp group get into her. And he said, "No, she was actually pretty good, and she was really good at kicking." And I was like, oh, "But she has this competitive nature where
she looked unbelievably
natural." Can I honestly
say
to you, whenever you see these kind of press junkets and people of, I mean, there isn't anyone of her stature, but those you would have, it would say doing these things like Boris Johnson. You remember he abseiled down a building, his trousers fell off.
And we played tag rugby with the 8-year-olds and ran over the top of one.
And played football with the other one and knocked one straight out. And then you look at the Virgin, Richard, what's he called? The guy who is Virgin.
Branson.
Richard Branson.
So I thought it was a ton of abuse, which is what you normally use.
No, he went and did that, he did that cable thing and he tore his trouser, looked uncomfortable and choked himself. And it all went awfully wrong. So when she was announced, I thought, amazing. We know, she obviously likes her rugby. But the way she caught the ball, the way she jumped the line out, the little outside break, she was utterly fantastic. She was really, really, really good. And so I was like, amazing. And dual sport, what an amazing ambassador.
Just imagine, like... anyone who's ever tried it, getting thrown up a line out if you've never done it before is not easy.
No.
Because normally you'll kick the prop in either the nuts or in the face, won't you? As he's lifting you. And she just looked at effort, bearing in mind she probably doesn't weigh that much. And Genji was probably just like, could do it on his own. But
yeah. Imagine if someone had flown out of a blind spot and just folded her up. Unlucky! How bad would that be? Like close protection.
And the best thing is when it rolls to England, Wales, we get the Battle of the Cambridges.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. Do you reckon they've had to, because that's what, when I was doing a media day for Green King when the day she did it, and they were asking me, "So what do you think of the Duchess doing this?" I was like, "Well, obviously everything I've said, she was brilliant. Well, would you care that she supported Wales?" I was like, "No, I don't." But she was cheering for Wales in England 2015. They showed a picture of Harry and then both the Cambridges standing, sitting both wearing Welsh shirts. Like, listen,
but that's the beautiful thing. If you own all four, you can do what you want.
That's what I mean.
Change horse mid race. Well done. That was very impressive. Very much looking forward to Rome with England Rugby Travel. And last but not least, there's a new episode. A new what? A new episode out this week of The Good, the Scaz and the Rugby, sponsored by Allianz. Scaz, Elma and Mike are joined by Helen Glover. So look out for that on Friday. That must have been quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, it was a lovely chat, actually. No, she's a fantastic woman who was pretty good at things. We were going through her list of achievements. And when you get to quintuplet gold medalist at World Gold, just to get to two, or get one, but then to be a quintuplet.
Yeah. I went
through a Wikipedia page, and you know on Wikipedia when they do Olympics and World Champs, they list all the gold medals, they have them all down. You have to scroll about three pages to get to the bottom of just the medals.
Right.
I'm glad I'm not married to her, Steve. I'm lucky, pal.
I haven't got that problem.
Don't forget we've got these shooting days.
Oh yeah, go on, give it a good.
So we've got a part of Good Bad Rugby. We did a shooting day last year that was incredibly successful. We have a couple more dates flying around. We've got 30th of June at EJ Churchill's. We've got Honesbury in Warwickshire on 22nd of September. Teams of four guns are available. The link is on our Instagram. You can find it there. We've also got four dinners. You can attend at Ashton Gate in Bristol on the 29th of June, Welford Road 21st of September, Franklin's Gardens 29th of September, and a venue to be decided in London on the 20th of October, and Sandy Park on the 10th of November. All of these are available. You can turn up, you can join us with shooting, you can join us with chatting. We're much more controversial in person than we are on the podcast, which is even possible.
What about last week?
Oh, God. Yeah, we visited St. James's Wealth Management.
Yeah.
Fantastic upper class highbrow. Yeah. Somebody rhyming with Wright Rindle may have had a couple of sherbets, but he didn't drop the C-bomb like he did in the other one.
No. It's a good night, that, actually, wasn't it?
It was good.
Yeah. Let's leave it there. Last but not least.
Oh,
this isn't going to translate. Alex? This is not going to translate very well to the podcast.
Yeah. Alex is holding something up, fans.
Yeah, it's just a shirt, nothing else.
It's our shirt.
We've got our first
bit
of stash,
yeah,
which has been designed for us. City Index on the front, our logo, Good, the Bad, and the Rugby above the heart. We've got Cure Parkinson on one arm, which I like. Restart Rugby on the other.
Have we?
Have you seen that?
I saw 6.5. They've got 6.5 numbers.
It's a 6.5.
Technically, you haven't paid for that copyright of that idea, but
what we've done is built a shirt, and now we need to build a team to go. It'd be quite fun to build like a sevens team and put a pro sevens team on the circuit.
That's how the shirt came around. There was a little game in the mix somewhere along the line. So it will come.
Do you think it will come? I'm sort of feeling older and older and less and less capable of
you were completely incapable of playing first time round.
I was going to run the water.
No, but then you thought you were going to play until I pointed out that once you got folded up, you wouldn't be able to run your tech business or do the pod.
The one that really made me realise I had no interest in playing was the Jack Adams Memorial Day game. And like, who was it that busted his Achilles in the first minute and worked on a build? Was it Adam Eustace?
Adam Eustace.
That's what I mean. What I told you about. Like, it's all fun and games. Like when I went to Dubai and they're doing
Dubai 10s.
But his
nickname was Butterbean because he was made generally of butter. There wasn't much muscle or athletic ability there.
We've got a kit. If people can send us ideas for a team, let's get onto it.
I think a mixed touch team in some hot country that we could enter would be quite good.
Beach touch. You know, sevens and schoolboy rugby is massive in Sri Lanka. Well, great surf, great food, great culture.
Funny that we've got a date, 2023, Sri Lankan trip.
Yes, ideas for a team, please. Very much appreciated. We've been the Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. Enjoy it all this week. It does feel like I'm going to throw it out there. There is a nicer atmosphere to the Six Nations this year. Eddie Jones, very gracious in defeat.
He did say there was a 62-minute video coming, though, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
He made a joke about it. He calls from Razzie with love.
Yeah,
it's quite good.
Right. Take a deep breath. Enjoy all that's to come this weekend. We've got a lot going on. Come and find us if you fancy it. The show has been produced by Shara Kilgallen. Oh, no, she hasn't, because she's away. Yeah, so it's been produced by Hunky Sam.
Dreamy Sam. And also, he's not so snippy with the scissors, so it's going to be a roller coaster until we get cancelled.
Yeah, okay. The show is produced by Sam this week. Sam Roberts, well done to you. Pulled together by the world-class fixer, Matt Chuck Norris. The Good, the Bad, and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. See you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. It can't have been easy.